With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And I went to the year 3000. Not much has changed, but they live underwater.
It's quite good singing, I think.
That's what I go to school for.
No, that was McFly.
No, that wasn't.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. I was just freaking you out.
Oh, you got me. Oh, you got me. Oh, hey, so listeners, you probably, if you haven't guessed already, you probably are going to guess by our wicked hummus. Delightful.
Harmonious.
Oh, I love hummus. Eating a lot of hummus at the moment. Harmonious.
I'm keto at the moment.
You are?
Yeah, ketogenic.
Right. Cool, yeah.
Keto. I'm in ketosis right now. That's why I'm on such great form.
You're in who? Who are you in?
Ketosis.
You're in ketosis.
In ketosis, yeah. I'm fueled off fat. I'm living off fat. No carbs.
They're living off the fat of the land, mice of men.
Living off the fat of my kitchen.
Listener, as I was saying before, you probably noticed by our lovely singing that we have the wonderful, the legendary, the almighty Matt Willis on the podcast today. We're super excited for this. Matt is an absolute legend. He was in a band called Busted. Now, if you were growing up in the 90s, 2000s, if you weren't growing up in the 90s or in the 2000s, weren't they? Then you'll know exactly who Busted are.
I mean, they were growing up in the 90s, but the band wasn't together until...
We were also growing up in the 90s, weren't we, yeah. Francis?
Which band were you more into in the 90s?
I think I was...
Spice Girls.
I love Spice Girls. I was into Boyzone. Love that.
So you liked all the pop bands?
Yeah, first CD or tape I ever bought was a Spice Girls one.
Really, yeah. Well, that does not surprise me.
Well, you should be surprised by my musical taste. Anyway, we should probably intro the podcast, Francis.
Ladies and gentlemen, legend, musical legend from Busted.
Wait, why do you slip over your words every time?
No, I said legend.
Legend, super,
comma,
musical.
Legend, I like full stop. Musical legend, comma, Busted's Matt Willis.
Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen.
On the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy
this
one.
Listen to it now, you'll love it.
We'll love it. You'll love it.
It's good, it's going to be, you'll love it. Stay tuned. for the actually, which I thought was quite a good question of the week.
Enjoy the podcast.
See you later.
Bye bye.
Hey, welcome back.
You say this every single time that you come onto a podcast. You say welcome back.
Yeah, because I'm welcoming back our regular listeners.
Well, but surely the polite thing to do would be welcome our guest first rather than the listeners. The guest is far more important.
Well, we haven't introduced the guest yet.
Well, there you go. You shouldn't just go straight into saying hi to the listeners.
Look, so I'm sorry, Matt Willis, but the listener, you know, which is. You know, I refer to the collective listeners as the listener, you know, in the singular. I think they're very important to us. You know, we should treat them with respect. Wait, Matt, are you hearing? Are you reading this?
I'm hearing. I didn't know whether or not I was supposed to answer. I was like, am I in? Am I out?
We're in. We're in, baby. I mean,
we just made
it really confusing.
Okay, hi. Hi.
Yeah, there we go.
Hi, listener.
You're really still at the moment, Matt Willis, I think.
I am.
Yeah.
Hey, Matt, you probably have the same thing though. Do you have the same thing where, okay, with your bandmates, did you care more about the bandmates or care more about the fans? Because I definitely care more about the fans than my bandmate. I don't really care about Francis, if you know what I mean. Who did you care about more?
That's really tough.
It's a tricky one, right?
It's a tricky one because I love my bandmates. I love them to death, but they also drive me fucking mental. So it's like one of those kind of like, you know, they're wicked, but, you know, at the end of the day, without anyone buying anything, we're pretty fucked. So,
yeah,
you know,
without the fans, band, you guys are just a bunch of guys just like making noise.
Making noise in a garage. Yeah, it's not anywhere near as fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not as glamorous either.
No, it's definitely not, no.
I totally know what you mean. Can I also, before we actually kick things off, Matt, that if my teenage self knew that I was speaking to you right now, he'd be freaking the hell out. He'd be really,
oh, really?
Going bananas because I was just mate, I was like the biggest fan. I was still am the
Were
biggest
you really?
Fan. I was like the biggest fan. Yeah, hugest.
Oh,
hugest
man.
Fan.
Oh, great. Oh,
but I think
good.
Every sort of teenager was.
Hey. You know, he said that to...
To who?
The noise next door, too, so I don't know.
What? The noise next door?
That's a fucking name I haven't heard in 20 years. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
Do you know, I actually lived down the road from the noise next door at one point in my life. I didn't live next door to them.
Did you really?
Yeah, and I know I used to drink with them back in the noughties.
Wait, hang on. So you're saying in the 90s you used to...
No, the noughties.
Oh, that's the 2000s, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you ever meet the noise next door?
Do you know, I'm sure that we crossed paths with them at some point. They weren't very memorable, obviously.
Basically, you guys were like you guys were like huge, and they were like trying to be
to be huge,
like trying to be like Busted and McFly, right?
I don't really remember. I remember I met someone, I think I know a guy called John McLaughlin who wrote their songs. I met him, and I wrote with him before, and I think he was in charge of that project. But yeah, that's all I know. I can't remember any of their songs or anything, but I'm sure they were great guys.
Well, isn't one of them The Noise Next Door? I don't know. Isn't one of them like self-titled? Like,
what, they're just singing
hey,
about them.
That's so noisy.
I don't know. Actually, that's just so much. Why the fuck? Why didn't we ever have a self-titled song? Can't believe we didn't do that.
Busted.
We didn't ever have a song called Busted. That's a we missed a trick there.
Hey, well, we can
Busted,
write that with you.
That's
actually,
a real
if you like.
Yeah, great. That's next album, first single. That is right there.
But Matt, you know, for all of the listeners who don't know who you are, and I don't know why they wouldn't know, but they don't know who you are. You're in a band called Busted, and Busted were, you know, especially when I was in my teenage, so exactly the early noughties, they were just the biggest band out there for sure. Or, you know, every sort of teenager plus and above in the world, you know, especially in the UK, were just listening to you guys. But also the thing is that you guys were super young at the same time. And that, and I think that kind of fame at like that age must have been so intense to deal with, especially being a performer and things like that. Because how old were you when you guys started Busted?
Well, me and James started the band when we were 16. We just left. We'd just done our GCSEs and we started that summer. So it was kind of, we were 16, but we didn't get signed till we were 18. So we had 2 years of kind of writing songs in bedrooms and stuff. And then we auditioned Charlie in because, funnily enough, no one really got the me and James Bourne duo. And we were kind of going to record companies. No one was really paying much attention. We still had, you know, a few of the songs that we've got now, but no one was really paying much attention. Then we auditioned, and in walks incredibly handsome frontman Charlie Simpson, and we got signed in 2 weeks.
No, shut up. You know, so shut up.
All we were missing, these two, you know, dickhead wannabe skater kids, all that they needed to do was get a ridiculously handsome front man and then bang, you know, and we got
but you
signed
guys,
in 2 weeks
you guys
later.
Were like unique it. Amongst those bands as you guys actually wrote and actually performed all your own music. You played all your own instruments and stuff, or am I wrong there?
I think it's one of those things. It's like it's like we always thought we were going to be Blink-182. Yeah. Like we always kind of like thought we were going to be like Sum 41 or something like that. Like we were kind of like aiming towards that. And then it wasn't till like our first couple of singles that came out and we were kind of like seeing us on the front of Smash Hits and all these magazines. We were like, oh, where's that? We're not quite what we thought we were. You know, we're a very different breed of band. What's happened here, you know, but I wasn't really complaining. You know, I was kind of like, cool, this everything seems to be going well. Don't fucking rock the boat. But Charlie, I think because he auditioned in late, I think he came to the band expecting what we were expecting. And it could kind of be, you know, he was a kind of real, like a much more credible kind of rock musician than I was, you know, and he kind of came from this world. So I think it was much more of a kind of rude awakening to him when he saw that he was suddenly probably perceived as a proper pop band and not really kind of what he ever intended, you know. But I think that was more of a shock for him. But for me, I was just like, cool, everything seems to be going well. Don't say anything.
Yeah, but that's quite a tricky thing then, right? That if you're going towards something and you're perceiving yourself as something and then suddenly that you're seen as sort of a pop band, but you're like, hey, we weren't out to be a pop band, we're meant to be kind of this skater band, this sort of, you know,
it's kind of like Jamie, how, you know, like you thought you were going to be the next Brad Pitt when you went on Made in Chelsea.
yeah then, oh was I wrong. But it is when you set out to do something, especially, you know, when you're creating music and you're thinking it's one way and then it's perceived a different way, like even though you're getting success and you were getting huge amounts of success, do you suddenly think, well, this isn't the type of music that we wanted to make from the beginning? Why are people thinking that we're some kind of pop band when we don't?
Well, that's the thing. It was the music we wanted to make from the beginning because that was the music we were writing. We just came from a pop sensibility. So we came at things. We didn't start in clubs. We didn't gig in in punk rock venues our entire life and break off alternative radio like all the bands that we loved and respected did. We sat in our bedroom and wrote songs to emulate them. But me and James especially came from a kind of a much more kind of pop angle with the way we were writing. And then Charlie came and brought this kind of whole new alternative kind of world to us. But I think, it was our doing. We did it, you know, but I think maybe signing to a major record company, they were like, whoa, what are you doing? You need to be this and you will sell fuck loads of records. And they were right, you know. So we did what we were told and it did really well, you know.
But I don't understand. How does it – so you and James had this idea to create a band. You went out there to all these record companies trying to get signed by something and they were – kind of listening to, do you just walk in the door, do you hand your tape? What was the old school way to do it back then? Because obviously things have totally changed now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I get asked by people all the time, you know, what my son is in a band or my cousin's in a band. Like, have you got any advice? I'm like, I don't fucking know what to do. I don't even know.
Yeah.
I don't know how we did it. You know, I have no idea. Like, there's no path. There is, you really kind of make your own thing, you know. But basically me and we had a bunch of songs that we wanted to get recorded, but we just had them on a four track in James's bedroom. Like it was just a four track recorder with a recording device with four tracks. And you kind of record like a guitar, then a vocal, then a guitar, you know, really basic shit. And then the guy that was looking after us gave us the opportunity to go and sing for a demo for a songwriter. Basically a songwriter had written a song for Westlife that he wanted Westlife to sing. And he was like, if you come and sing our song for us, then we'll record one of your demos for free. And we were like, fucking brilliant, you know, great. So we came in and sung this song that they pitched to Westlife and they recorded one of our demos at the same time in a couple of days. And when they were sending the pitch in for Westlife, they sent our single in as well. And then it got picked up by Simon Cowell. And because Simon Cowell wanted to sign it, suddenly everyone wanted to sign it. And then we ended up signing in Universal. So it was really a massive bit of luck. You know, I really think it is. We were so lucky to have kind of said yes to doing
that. So we're all part of the same family, you know, Universal, Made in Chelsea's with Universal Pictures.
No, we're not. We're NBC.
No, that's owned by Universal.
It's NBC.
NBC Universal.
Okay.
It's a merger.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right,
so are you just saying that you and Matt Willis and I...
So we're brothers in arms.
We're brothers in arms, basically.
We're like from the Marines.
I like
what we're
it.
Doing.
I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's interesting though. But it is. It's funny how you say that because it is. So many people ask you, how do you get into that world and how do you do it? But it is freaking so much luck, isn't it? That you're in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you live and die by your songs. You know, with a band, with music, you live and die whether you've got a good song or not. You can't polish a turd. Like you could be, you know, you can tick every other box, but if your single isn't good, you're fucked. You know, in my personal opinion, you know, like if you can't grab an audience.
But what if you're like really ugly? What if you're like really ugly, but you write a really great song?
It's worked for quite a few people I can think of right now. Music charts.
Matt Willis, who are you thinking of?
I don't know what you're saying. I don't know. I can't think of their name right now. But, you know, it's worked for quite a few people, you know. So I don't think that matters so much anymore.
Because I would definitely say that now, maybe I'm totally wrong, but before I feel like it was like a package, right? Like, you know, the sort of late 90s, early 2000s were like sort of boy bands. It was like pop. It was all these different things. And it was like a package together. It was like the image. It was the look. It was the songs. It was everything. And I feel like now it's not so much about the package. It's more about the sort of songs. Or is that total bullshit?
No, I think you're exactly right. I think the thing is that Busted never got radio.
Did you not? Did
like, you have what people radio don't realize is when Busted first came out, no one played us on the radio. Like occasionally, like some regional radio station in Southend would play us, but like no, like Radio One, no Capital, no nothing like this were playing us. But we broke off TV because people liked our performance and because we were very different, I think, than the other things that they were being shown. But we didn't fit any format because we were kind of, we were pop music, but we were guitar driven pop music. And that wasn't cool at the time. It was like, if you weren't a boy band or a girl band, you kind of didn't fit in that pop market. So where were we? We weren't alternative radio. We weren't Kerrang magazine. We weren't these kind of things, but we weren't the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and these kind of things that were coming before us. So where did we, you know, and it just so happened that we correlated at the same time as Avril kind of Lavigne kind of getting huge. Yeah, yeah. You know, it was just kind of like, it was like a perfect storm.
She
really
was a skater boy.
Have you heard the theory behind Avril Lavigne that she actually died and someone took her place?
Jamie, not all this flat earth stuff.
Please tell me some of this shit.
Mate,
please tell me.
Mate, I'm not kidding. Like, mate, it's true.
Sorry, Matt. But Jamie's a bit of a conspiracy theorist.
I love it.
It's true. It's Lavigne died. If I Google this, so Avril Lavigne says that she died and was replaced by a doppelganger called Melissa. I'm not even kidding you. No, there was a conspiracy that Avril Lavigne had died and she was replaced by a doppelganger.
Well, they look like different people, but that could very well be explained away with like surgery.
The theory is that she was fed up with the celebrity world and hired a body double to represent her at public events. And then she died, supposedly.
And the doppelganger just carried on.
And the other one just went, well, this is sweet. I'll still be Avril Lavigne.
I mean, it could be
forever.
True.
Well, there's the same theory about Paul McCartney, right? They think that he was replaced by a...
Really?
He died in a car crash, supposedly.
And someone, to the theory. Shut up, Francis. Yeah. You're just making up names now. You're just
saying Paul McCartney. You probably know that one, Matt. You must have heard about that one.
I've never heard about that one, no. Oh. No.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But Matt, it's true what you were, it was true what you were saying. Because what I think what you guys did was you sort of created a category where, okay, so you had, you could listen to people like, I don't know, you could listen to people like Eminem, for example, who would totally one way, and that you knew your parents would just get really pissed off at you at, and they would hate you the fact you listened to that. Or you could go the complete other way and listen to someone like NSYNC, which was like a problem. But you kind of came in this middle bracket, which you weren't totally where you were, you know, parents would hate you guys, but also you weren't the other side where you were total boy band. So you kind of came in the middle, and that was more exciting, I think, for everyone, because, you know, it was as a guy, I suppose, it wasn't cool to like NSYNC, but you could like Busted, and so could girls.
You could just about get away.
You could get away with it, right?
We were the girlfriend's favorite band, who the boyfriend didn't mind them liking.
Yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's really fucked up. But I can see why Charlie fucking left. But it was. It's not quite ever in what we intended to be.
But when was the point? When was the point when, because, you know, even though you sort of say it's luck and things like that, but what I find amazing is that you were 16 years old, you reached this fame straight away. You weren't one of these bands that were like gigging for, or maybe you were, you weren't gigging for like 10 years trying to make it. You went straight there to like the top straight away. So you didn't have to, and that is almost harder to deal with, because if you've been gigging for years and been seeing the industry and understanding the industry and seeing what music is like, and then you get to the top, you kind of understand it. But if you suddenly get that fame straight away, it's
all that money, it's just like
yeah,
it must have been
tedious,
tough.
Horrible.
Horrible. You know what?
It's weird, man. It's weird, especially kind of coming from where I come from and stuff. It was a very weird kind of, like, this shit didn't happen to people. Do you know what I mean? It didn't happen to people like me anyway. It kind of like felt like so bizarre that it was actually happening, you know, at times. But the thing is, also, what you have to realize is that it's a very different level of fame, because Busted were only really famous to Busted fans. Like, if you were a Busted fan, you fucking loved Busted, right? But if you were Pete from the pub didn't know who Matt from Busted was. He knew of Busted, you know, because they were those three kids that played the song about the school teacher, but he didn't know who I was, you know. So I could pretty much get away with being in life as long as I obeyed certain rules, like don't go to a shopping mall on a Saturday. That's a fucking stupid idea. Don't go to a bowling alley ever, you know, these kind of things, you know, like certain kind of like no-go areas. But the rest of it, like, I could kind of get away with shit. Like, you know, it only really started to get weird when, you know, you go to other gigs. Like, I loved going watching bands. It became impossible to do that because, like, the bands that I would love, for some reason, the fans of those bands hated my band. You know, so I would go to these gigs with bands that I loved, you know, like, or punk rock bands and things like that. And I would be, you know, it would get problematic because people suddenly had a massive opinion of you.
I saw this interview once with Elon Musk, right?
And yeah.
It's like a 60-minute interview. It's just really interesting where he's talking, the presenter is talking to him and says, what do you think about the fact that Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and all these people think what you're doing with space travel is wrong? They think what you're doing is wrong. And he gets very emotional. He says, well, they're my heroes. And that really upsets me. Because that's not what I want to do. In fact, I don't want that to happen at all. And perhaps that's the same thing that you may have felt, because if you're just playing music and all you want to do is love music, and you obviously, it's like you can see, you know, by the way you hold yourself, the way you are, you just love music. So if you're for the fans of other bands to dislike you, you must be like, well, fuck, that's bullshit. That's not what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it was quite difficult. It was especially hard for Charlie. Charlie really found it really tough. Yeah, it was a real annoyance for him. It was a weird thing. But then music was so tribal back then. Like, I mean, I don't think it's the same now. Like, I feel like before, you were either you know, even at school, indie. You were indie or a grunger, or you were fucking, you know, like a skater kid, or you were into punk rock, or you were into metal, or you were a teeny bopper, as people would say, you know, all these kind of things.
So wait, what's like, a teeny bopper? What's
like
teeny
a pop
bopper?
Music fan, you know, like they're
like
a teeny
Britney
bopper.
Fan.
Yeah, like something like that, you know, but you were one of these kind of things, right? Or you liked metal and you didn't like nu metal, or you didn't like, you know, you were very much like you were tribal and that's what you loved, right? Whereas now I think we're living in a playlist generation where people are listening to, you know, Slipknot and Post Malone and Avicii or whatever. You're kind of getting all these kind of things. Like my playlists are all over the place. I've always been a bit like that. But I think now people are becoming much more kind of just absorbing music for it being cool and them
good
liking
music.
It and being good music rather than them having to fit some kind of genre.
Well, I think it's more democratized in that sense, because like if you write a good song, it will get like it will spread through Spotify and, you know, through social media and everything.
Yeah.
So it has become more of a, you know, I guess a level playing field in terms of who, you know, there aren't these gatekeepers to stardom that there once were, you know, holding the key to success, you know, for whatever the bands they anoint as the next pop stars. But now people who are producing good music from all around the world, maybe in their bedroom, you know, you know, Avicii or a lot of these guys who start, you know, just start randomly producing music on Ableton in the room. Suddenly they can, you know, have this huge hit and a life-changing success from it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I quite like
what, that. Which tribe were you in, Jamie, when you were at school?
I was in the metal one.
Really? You're into metal?
I was in
Wait, who are your favorite metal bands?
Oh, Nine Inch Nails. Was that metal? There we go. I liked the tribal aspect.
I thought you didn't really like music before.
No, I loved music, but I was I wasn't indie at all. I definitely wasn't. I was, if there's anything that I was close to, it was the teen bopper, whatever it was. That was the one that I was close enough to.
I was punk, and then I went became indie. I was called a sort of indie Brit pop.
I liked hip hop as well.
Oasis and
hip hop and things like that. I've always liked hip hop, but the.
Is that your tribe?
That's my tribe. But I like the tribal. I like the tribal aspect of music. I like the fact that you had your niche and you had your era and you knew where you belonged. I feel like more people then felt that they were part of like a family almost. You felt like you had you were part of a group. And now I don't think people feel like they're part of a group. Everyone feels disconnected. And actually, music used to bring a lot of people together. And I feel like now, like you said, it's like that playlist generation. You go to Glastonbury, you go to whatever it is, and you'll go listen to everyone rather than going to one particular stage. And I'm not sure if I like that as much. I don't know. I just remember going to watch Oasis when I was younger and everyone just going nuts and just being there. It was like this wave of like emotion and things like that. I don't think we get that anymore. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
To be honest, I feel a bit out of touch of what's happening with music these days, but I still listen to Blink-182. You know, I'm kind of a bit out of it, you know, but you know, you only have to see what's happening with people like Billie Eilish and things like that. Like, this is still capturing people. There's certain things about a pop star who's, you know, I think of everyone that I've ever loved, right? Like in music or in, you know, in any kind of way, it's always someone who's a bit different and not afraid to step out of what is the conventional way of doing things, you know. And I think and I think that still resonates with people now, you know. Like, you get these people who come out like Billie Eilish, for instance, who is completely different. I mean, when her first single came out, I heard it once and I was like, what the hell is that, you know?
Yeah,
I heard it I heard it three times and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing, you know. But
I actually predicted her success. I went to her first ever concert.
Shut up, you claim this every time.
I claim it. There's a picture proving it.
Yeah, but how many times have you been to a gig and gone like, I predict this person's going to be bigger than they did? Loads.
No, I went to the gig because I thought she was going to be big.
Yeah, I mean, I did that with Ed Sheeran back in the day.
Did you?
Yeah. I didn't.
Really?
I definitely didn't do that. But Matt, okay, I just also, just because I'm so interested, just because I think that fame at that age is like a really intense thing to say. And I think fame in any sort of way is especially intense. I think it's super hard when you're young. Did you handle the fame well? Because I think being in a band like you, where you have that like cult following that is kind of super intense, did you
think it was, because I think what happens a lot of time is people think it's really fun and then suddenly go, actually, wait, shit, this is a bit intense.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit, I mean, it was an adjustment. But, you know, everything was then, you know, so like our lives really changed over a year to be unrecognizable to what they were before. Like, I mean, when What I Go to School For came out, we were three, you know, kind of like 18-year-old kids who just like, who'd not done anything, you know, not been out of, like, I'd never been out of the country, you know, like, I mean, Charlie and James had, but, you know, I'd never done anything like that. So it was a very, suddenly we were touring, you know, Europe and going to America to shoot videos and all this stuff. I was like, fucking, what is going on? You know, so it was a really big adjustment for me, you know, but the fame thing, I don't know. I don't know if it really, people knowing who I was very strange. But I think when I really noticed that was afterwards, like after when Busted finished in like 2005, when we broke up, I really found, because people were really interested in the downfall, you know, people were really interested, like the
always the
papers and these kind of things that would kind of, and you know, to be honest, I fed it, you know, because I was a complete wreckhead and falling out of nightclubs and things, you know, so it was a, you know, and I was kind of in these kind of gossip columns everywhere, and kind of like I found that very suddenly it was a different thing. Fame wasn't fun, you know, because when it was in Busted, like it was, we were famous to Busted fans, and we were kind of like, and we were kind of loved by them, you know, it was kind of cool, you know, but suddenly I didn't have that anymore. I didn't have Busted to be loved for. I just had this other level of fame where I was known for once doing something, and I was kind of, you know, not really living up to expectations within myself of what I should have been doing. So I had a weird kind of year or two with it. And then I think, but then it changed again when I did I'm a Celebrity, and suddenly I did that TV show. And from only really Busted fans knowing was who I was, to suddenly stepping out of Australia, coming back home and getting in a black cab and going, all right, Matt, you know, and going into a news agency and going, all right, Matt, I was just like, fucking, what has gone on? You know, that was like,
it's the same bloke running the news agent who's in the cab.
Exactly. This bloke keeps following me around, you know, but that was really weird, because suddenly I was like, oh, now I'm famous, you know, like it was a very, luckily that only lasted about 4 months, you know, and then everyone's fucking on to, you know, Strictly Come Dancing, people, you know, so it's kind of like,
but it's amazing how short people's attention span is now. Like,
yeah, completely.
You know, like even the sort of the Love Island people, they have like a year to like take advantage of it, because then there's a whole nother group of them that everyone kind of
obviously there's breakthroughs within each of these categories, and there's people like yourselves who kind of stand the test of time and do other things, but it's you know, it is a very
Francis, by the way.
No, I mean, I was just looking at Jamie and just thinking, do other things. What?
You know,
still, as far as I remember, he's still doing the same thing.
You know, but there is a shelf life, isn't there? And I think the thing is, like I remember when I came off I'm a Celebrity, and everyone was trying to make me do, like the only reason I did that show is I had a solo album out, which was failing. Right. And like my first two singles did not very well. And my record company said to me, we're not going to release your album. And I was like, fucking, whoa, what the fuck am I going to do in my life? And they said, well, I'm a Celebrity. I've asked you to go in there. It'll be good promo. I was like, brilliant. You know, so I'll take it. Fantastic. You know, and then I came out of that show and everyone was like, right, you need to do this advert and this appearance. And the other, and I just said no to everything, because all I wanted to do was my album, which didn't do well after the show either, you know. So it was like, you know, if you can capitalize on these things, you can capitalize on them, you know. But I don't think it was it wasn't really in me to really do that. Like, it's not why I did it, you know.
But also that kind of being a bit you know, hesitant to do just whatever comes along to try and promote the fire of your fame, I think, you know, often, your sustainability as a personality is defined by like what you turn down and like you know being a bit selective about what you do. I mean, that's why I chose to do private parts, because I think, you know, it's the type of thing which can
makes you credible, you know, right?
Is that what you're saying? Really lend to my credibility, yeah. You know, my future political career.
All right, team. Listen, Matt, we've got to hold you there for 1 second because Francis, we need to have the question of the week.
Oh God.
I love how you just make it up the top of your head. How many episodes are we in?
All right, okay. All right, got a good one.
Okay.
In 1700,
yes.
How many times bigger or smaller were wine glasses than they are today?
Matt, as our guest, you can answer this stupid fucking question.
I mean, in 1700?
How?
I mean, are we talking about in Britain? Do people drink wine in Britain? Oh, well,
wine glasses, yeah. But we're right next to France, aren't we?
Yeah, right, okay. I thought we drank like out of those ale kegs and stuff. I'm thinking of medieval times. Right.
Yeah, France is just sent in such a patronizing way, obviously.
Obviously close to France.
Obviously next to France.
I don't know. I know nothing about wine, so I'm going to say they were smaller in 1700 by two times.
Two times smaller.
Sweet. You think they're two times smaller? I'm going to go for three times smaller. That's what I'm going to go for because I have no idea as well. Right, Matt, listen, that's the end of part one, but we're going to save my diary for part two when we come back in just a second, so you can't go anywhere. You ready for part two?
Woo!
Yeah.
Let's do it.
See you in part two.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.